You're listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. This is the final part of Last of the Roman Punks, which is itself the last story of my short story suite, Love and Roman Punk. If you've enjoyed any of these stories, please consider purchasing the book from 12th Planet Press. Weirdly, it's actually one of my most popular titles I've ever had released. It was even once taught as a text in the University of Texas, a university in Texas anyway, on a course about using history to meld into fiction. And of course, it was the fictional therapy I put myself through in the wake of my PhD in classics, in which I did indeed study imperial women of ancient Rome, including Agrippina, who is to this day one of my favourites. I still haven't written my fiction response to my love for Livia. That's going to have to wait until, I always say, until I'm a better writer. But it's been a while now, and I don't know, maybe I'm not going to get any better. I should probably write that book. So yeah, Love and Roman Punk, it's a very short, very cute short story collection that was part of the seminal 12 Planets range from 12th Planet Press, in which a selection of Australian female authors were commissioned to write 4 short stories for a collection. They're all wonderful books. I'm very fond of mine, obviously, but the others are all wonderful too. Highly recommended if you like short stories. Okay, so this is the last part of this story, and when I finish, I'll come back and tell you what I'll be reading you next week. Okay, Last of the Roman Punks, Part 4. It looks kind of easy in vids, where the hero squeezes through air vents or whatever, without rumpling his combat suit. Whoever designed airships did not give sufficient consideration to future insurance investigators and waitresses who might be trying to save the world. I wriggled myself along a narrow space at about 3 inches per minute. My bruises had bruises on them, and Jules was muttering the whole time about how, oh no, she couldn't just take a job on a sushi train like a normal person. She had to pick the flying Roman punk bar that was trying to kill her. My phone chimed, and it took some serious gymnastics to slide it out of my pocket. Merce? Not a good time. Seb, don't hang up. Have you seen Eloise lately? I barked a short laugh. You might say that. Has your department got any pull with the army? Or the Air Force? As usual, Mercy barreled through without actually listening to me. The sergeant investigating the robbery at Nan's house is trying to connect it to another recent crime. They have CCTV footage of your Eloise breaking into a grave out bush. That stopped me. I lay perfectly still in the air vent, breathing hard. Nova Ostia. The old Roman replica city in the middle of nowhere. Nan grew up there, and that was where she'd buried Julius, the monster killer. Yes. Mercy sounded tinny and far away. She took the fucking sword. I hadn't seen it in the bar. Where was Eloise hiding it? There's a sword, Jules said from a metre or so behind me. I want that Gladius back, Agrippina said inside my head. Merce, get on to Blake, I said urgently. Your brother's useless with this stuff, she complained. Yeah, but he has a double degree in engineering and computer hacking, and I'm going to need him to find the specs for the Julia Augusta airship. She's about to dock in the next 20 minutes or so, and we need to stop that happening, or Eloise is going to lead a gang of newly blooded Lamia out to eat all the prettiest teenagers they can find. There was a long pause on the other end of the phone. Seriously? Mercy said finally. I wanted to scream at her. No, this is an overly elaborate prank. Don't I sound serious? I need Blake to work out how I can override this fucker and steer it out to sea, and I need you to use your police credentials to evacuate the Opera House platform and help me save the world, if it's not too much trouble. I'll give him a call then, she said, sounding shocked. You do that. I clicked the phone shut and started wriggling again. Almost there. You have a cop and a computer hacker in the family? Jules asked. Nan liked to plan ahead. I pushed open the hatch and half fell, half jumped down into the small triangular control room. I was expecting banks of flashing lights and switches and dials, but I guess I'd been watching the wrong kind of vids. Everything was smooth and empty, apart from a couple of touchscreens and the view of the city beneath us. I could see the Opera House platform only a few minutes away. Something slammed into me from behind, knocking me against the wall. My phone skittered across the floor, out of reach. Brian. He was stronger than before and hissing between his teeth like a reptile. I looked up to see Eloise dragging Jules down out of the hatch. She held the bronze gladius in one hand, pressing the edge against Jules's neck. It was a short, unimpressive weapon. No rust or green corrosion on it, and it was in pretty good condition, considering it had been slaying monsters for 2,000 years. I had seen similar swords in museums, crumbling pieces that would never take another edge, but this one was different. This gladius had been bathed in the blood of dozens of different monsters. It was the sword of Julius. If Jules survived this, I was going to recommend a tennis shot. Agrippina hissed like a lamia inside my skull. You don't want to do that, I said aloud. Her blood isn't pure enough, right? I wanted to do this properly, Eloise said in a pouty voice. This is all your fault, Seb. If you could have just let me wait to feed on the perfect victim, I could be the most powerful Lamia who's ever lived. But I'll settle for living forever. She leaned down, her teeth sharp as she came close to the blade. Jules let out a tiny gasp, and the edge of the gladius sank deeper. My phone, on the other side of the room, chimed and then beat at incoming data. I couldn't reach it. We're almost there, I said. Wait for your perfect victim. It's only a few minutes. This is your fault, Eloise said, and bit down. She was better at it than Brian had been. Jules cried out only once and then her eyes glazed over like it felt good. Her body fell limply against Eloise, who was drinking deep. Eloise only needed a mouthful to bring her full powers on to make herself a Lamia forever. But I had no faith she was planning to stop there. My sword, Agrippina snarled in my head. So take it, I demanded, furious at her for letting this get so far. The control room blurred before my eyes as the bitch of Rome took control of my body. I fought it for a moment and then tried to relax into it. I wasn't doing too well at this hero thing. Let one of the original Julias take the wheel. If you know anything about Julia Agrippina, you probably know she was part of the imperial family of Rome. She's famous for being one of Caligula's feistier sisters, exiled more than once because she spoke her mind in his presence. Then she married her own uncle Claudius, the next emperor, and poisoned him with a dish of mushrooms. You might even have heard about how her own son, the Emperor Nero, tried to kill her many times over. Not a popular lass, was Agrippina. Only there's more to the story than that. The truth is that Agrippina and her two sisters were like secret agents and paranormal bodyguards to their brother. They fought monsters and assassins. After he was gone, they raised his son in secret, training him for his future. They turned Julius into the monster killer he was. I don't know if they cursed him or just prepared him for what he had to do, but they're the reason he was as good as he was. So I guess they saved the world too, more than once. Agrippina knocked Brian back against the wall with my elbow and then did something with my leg that I didn't think was even anatomically possible. And when he headbutted me in the chest, she wrapped my hands firmly around his neck and, oh, fuck, I felt it through my fingers. We snapped Brian's neck. My hands shook with the sensation of his bones breaking, but we were still going, my limbs as our weapons. Eloise threw Jules to one side to fight us, but Agrippina scoffed at the amateurish hold she had on the gladius. She dodged with my body, weaved, spun, and I felt my hand wrench the hilt from Eloise. Her eyes glowed silver and she lunged for me, faster than any human could. But Agrippina was inside me, and she wasn't human either. I was caught between the two of them, unable to do anything except when Agrippina brought the sword swinging around to behead Eloise, I flinched, using every strength I had to pull the sword back, away, to stop it happening. Don't fight me, boy, Agrippina demanded, her voice filling me from edge to edge. I can't kill her. What did you think we were doing here? Teaching her a severe lesson? She's a monster. Let me do this for you. Eloise backed away slowly, eyes on me. Don't do it, Seb. We can be together again, forever. Yeah, okay, Agrippina, I said aloud. You can behead her now. Don't play the tough guy. No one believes it, Eloise said, sneering at me. All mouth, no guts. She lashed out a hand, smashing through the plastic window as if it was porcelain. I'm blooded. I'm stronger than you can imagine. We're only a few metres above the platform. I can jump from here and you can't stop me. Wouldn't be too sure of that, said another voice. I looked up and saw Jules over by the control panels. She was white as a ghost and had a bloody mark on her neck that matched mine, but she was holding my phone and looking pleased with herself. Seb, your brother says hi. Blake had come through with a hack then. About time. Eloise let out a screech of rage and leapt up onto the ledge as if she was a cat. The cold air streaming into the control room caught her blonde curls, so they flew up like a halo around her face. The green necklace stood out against her pale skin and fluttering white stola. We were over the harbour, nothing but water below us, and steadily climbing. Route changed. No platform below us. Oh, I'm sorry, said Jules politely. Did we rob you of the chance to snack on random teenagers? Probably for the best. Have you seen all the purple makeup the emos are pasting on this season? I bet they taste terrible. I let Agrippina raise the gladius with my hand, pointing at Eloise. We stay up here until that silver blood wears off. You and every one of your Lamia army. Eloise smiled and shook her head at me. Yeah, she was still cute. I'm only human. Not this time, Seb. I have a promise to keep. To Brian's wife. I heard him behind me, a low hiss, and half turned around before Brian smacked into me, broken neck cracking back into place. Fuck Lamia. Beheading works. Neck breaking doesn't. Something to remember in future. Brian and I struggled with the gladius. I didn't think I could kill him, not by choice, not again. Therese was such a sweetheart. He tried to bite my neck again. This was serious and my head was getting in the way of staying alive. One more time, I begged Agrippina, barely a whisper of a thought. One I'd feel guilty about for the rest of my life. She took me over again, and this time she took his head. Then it was done and I was standing in a pool of Brian's blood and Agrippina was gone. Maybe she'd never been there. Maybe she was just some hallucination brought on by whiskey and stress and vampires. Silver blood. There was nothing red about this sticky substance all over the floor. 2 hours ago, he'd been human. She's gone, Jules said in a low voice, and I looked up to see nothing but a broken plastic window. Reckon she survived the drop? I asked, trying not to sound like I was about to cry or faint or something unmanly like that. If I've learned one thing about Lamia today, it's that they always come back, she said. Yeah, that. So much for saving the world. The police used gas to get us out, knocked out the Lamia in waiting and us too. We woke up in hospital beds with a whole stack of paperwork to fill out. Mercy was teetering somewhere between getting herself fired from the police force and getting some sort of promotion. She refused to lie to the press about what was going on. The police had decided to set up some kind of special task force to go after Eloise, and Mercy was big on telling the world all about it. 2,000 years of silence didn't get us a monster-free world, she insisted. The best way to honour Julius now, and to continue his work, is to tell his story. I wasn't sure I agreed with that, but Mercy had confiscated all of Nan's papers, including Agrippina's book. I sensed a publishing deal in her future, if Blake didn't get the jump on her by blogging about it. They had taken their inheritance, and I was left with the gladius. The bronze short sword had been cleaned and was lying on my bedside table in the hospital room. No one, not nurses, not police, not even Mercy seemed to notice it. So, it was mine then. On the day they released us from hospital and police custody, Jules and I stood together outside the big white doors, blinking our eyes in the sunshine. "So what was that thing with my name?" she asked, cutting through the awkwardness like it was only in my head. "When I first told you what it was, you laughed at me." "Oh, our family kind of has a tradition that women with the name Julia are kind of superheroes, warriors, soldiers, hunters. Basically, they're mighty." It sounded stupid when you said it out loud, although Jules didn't seem to think so. She looked thoughtful, and then she smiled for the first time since I'd met her. "I like that. Mighty. I tell you what, next time your crazy ex tries to take over the world or raises an army of the undead or whatever, why don't you give me a call?" She walked away, still smiling. I watched her go. "I still want my necklace back," Agrippina said inside my head. "You again. We have unfinished business, you and I. If that unfinished business involves monsters and sword fighting, I'm busy that day." But I couldn't take my eyes off Jules, disappearing around a corner up ahead, returning to whatever life she had before she took the job on the Roman punk airship. "Give me a call," she'd said. "But, you know, only if there were Lamia to fight." I suppose there were worse fates than hunting monsters. It was a family tradition, after all. With a Julia by my side and another in my head, how could I go wrong? I took a deep breath and started walking. "Okay, Agrippina, where do we start?" Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. That completes Last of the Roman Punks, and that's the last of the Love and Roman Punk stories that I will be reading on this podcast. I'll put links in for the other stories from this collection and the podcast that they appear on. Next week, I'm going to be starting with another reprint story, but it's one that I think a lot of you probably won't have got hold of. This is a novella called Death at the Dragon Circus, which is my retired assassin's Join the Circus story. I'm completely in love with it, and I am planning to write more in that world, so I'd like it to be one of those ongoing serials that I return to again and again here on the podcast, like I have been with the Belladonna University Sharehouse stories and the Castle Charming stories. So I will be starting that one next week, and I'm looking forward to reading that to you. And then once we get through that, which should take a while because it's quite a long piece, I'll be back with an original serial for you, which will be the next Fake Geek Girl Belladonna University story. I don't know much about it yet because I haven't written it, but it's going to be called The Bromances. It will involve a road trip and a magic music festival. So lots to look forward to this year here on Sheep Might Fly. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next time.